Tato gad ashramam sakshat. Pitur dvaipaya nasyame. Ityadyam rishim anamya. Tachchishyams cha mahatmanaha. Tato gad ashramam sakshat. Pitur dvaipaya nasyame. Ityadyam rishim anamya. Tachchishmyams cha mahatmanaha. Tato gad ashramam sakshat. Pitur dvaipaya nasyame.
Ityadyam rishim ananya.
Thus speaking.
Ajam.
Foremost. Rishim. To the sage. Narayan Rishi. Anamya. Bowing down. Tat. His. Shishyan. To the disciples. Cha. And. Mahatmanaha. Great saints. Tata. From there. Narayana Ashram. Agat. He went. Ashramam. To the hermitage. Sakshat. Direct. Pitu. Of the progenitor. Dvaipayana Veda Vyas. May. My. Translation and purports by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami continued, after saying this, Narada bowed down to Sri Narayana Rishi, the foremost of sages, and also to his saintly disciples. He then returned to the hermitage of my father, Dvaipayan Vyas. Vyasadeva, the incarnation of the personality of Godhead, respectfully greeted Narada Muni and offered him a seat, which he accepted. Narada then described to Vyas what he had heard from the mouth of Sri Narayan Rishi. Thus I have replied to the question you asked me, O King, concerning how the mind can have access to the Absolute Truth, which is indescribable by material words and devoid of material qualities. He is the Lord who eternally watches over this universe, who exists before, during, and after its manifestation. He is the master of both the unmanifested and material nature and the spirit soul. After sending forth a creation, he enters within it, accompanying each living entity. There he creates material bodies and then remains as their regulator. By surrendering to him, one can escape the embrace of illusion, just as a dreaming person forgets his own body. One who wants liberation from fear should constantly meditate upon him, Lord Hari, who is always on the platform of perfection and thus never subject to material birth. Purport. By glancing upon the dormant universe at the time of sending forth the jiva souls into creation, the Supreme Lord provides all their necessities. For those living entities who are fruitive workers, he provides the intelligence and senses needed to achieve success in material work. For those who seek transcendental knowledge, he provides the intelligence by which they can merge into the spiritual effulgence of God, thus attaining liberation. And for the devotees, he provides the understanding that leads them to his pure devotional service. To arrange for these varied facilities, the Lord empowers material nature to begin the process of universal evolution. Thus, the Lord is Nimitta Karanam, or effective cause of creation, is also Upadana Karanam, the ingredient cause, inasmuch as everything emanates from him and he alone is constantly present before, during and after the manifestation of the created cosmos. Lord Narayan himself states this in the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, Aham Eva Sam Eva Gre Nanyad Yat Sat Asat Param Paschat Aham Yat Etachcha Yo Vashishyate So Smyaham. It is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation when there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead, and after annihilation what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. Bhagavatam 2.9.33. Primeval Maya and the Jiva soul may deserve the respective titles of Upadana and Nimitta causes of creation in a relative sense, but the Lord, after all, is the origin of both of them. Until he chooses to accept the mercy of the personality of Godhead, the Jiva soul is Anu Shayi, helplessly bound up by the embrace of illusion. When he turns to the Lord's worship, he becomes Anu Shayi in a different sense, fallen like a rod to pay obeisances at the Lord's feet. By that surrender, the soul easily casts illusion aside. Even though the liberated soul may still seem to be living in a material body, the connection he has with it is only an external appearance. He pays no more regard to it than a sleeping man pays to his body while busily engaged far, far away in his dream world. One gives up ignorance by abandoning false identification with one's material body. Sometimes one can achieve this state only by a severe effort that takes many lifetimes. But in some cases, the Lord may show special consideration for one he favours, regardless of how little credit that soul may have earned by regulated practice. In the words of Sri Bhishma Dev, Yam Iha Niriksha Hata Gata Swarupam, those who simply saw Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attain their original forms after being killed. Bhagavatam 1.9.39. That even demons like Aga, Vaka and Keshi were liberated by Lord Krishna without having performed any spiritual practices is an indication of his unique spiritual position as the original personality of Godhead. Knowing this, we should put aside all fear and doubt and give ourselves fully to the process of devotional service. As his final words of commentary on this chapter, Srila Sridhar Swami writes, Sava Shruta Shiro Ratna Nirajita Padambujam Boga Yoga Pradam Vande Madhavam Kami Namrayo. With their effulgence, the crest jewels among all the Shrutis offer aarti to the lotus feet of Lord Madhava. I pay homage to him who bestows material enjoyment honoured by material workers and who also grants the divine connection with him prized by those who bow down to him with reverence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also takes this opportunity to offer this humble prayer. He Bhakta Dwarayam Kanchad Valadi Roti Vomanak Prasadam Labhatam Yasmad Vishishta Swewa Natati. O devotees, this poor creature is standing at your doorway, waving his tail and barking. Please let him have a little prasadam so that he may become exceptional among dogs and get the best masters as his owner. Here the Acharya makes a pun on his own name, Vishishta, exceptional, Shwa, Eva, like a dog, Nata, Ati, having a master. Such is the perfection of Vaishnava humility. Thus ends the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada to the 10th canto, 87th chapter of the Bhagavatam, entitled The Prayers of the Personified Vedas. Om Gyan Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kaupata Rubyascha Kripa Sindubi Evacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishna Vebhyo Namanamaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Rama, Ram Rama, Hare Hare. So, as it says in the 49th verse, that the absolute truth cannot be understood by material words or because the absolute truth is devoid of material qualities. Sometimes you'll hear this. People often say, when they're talking about the absolute truth, when they're talking about God, they say that it's not possible to describe God or the absolute truth with material words. Not possible to describe. It's beyond description. They say this in India. Impersonalists say this, and they say this in the West. People say it in the West too. Ultimately, they're impersonalists also. Not possible to describe God is beyond perception. This is true. It says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahma Pramada Vipralipsa Karanapatava Asha Vigyavakye Nahi Dosha Esava. Which means that Brahma Pramada Vipralipsa Karanapatava. The conditioned soul has four defects. What are the four defects of conditioned souls?
Imperfect senses.
They cheat. They're in illusion. And? They make mistakes. So of the four, generally, which one is considered to be the source of the others? One is in illusion, right? Generally, we say like that. That one is in illusion. We are in illusion, we think we are the material body. That's illusion. So as long as you think you are the material body, and the material mind and the material tongue, that's illusion. And if you're in illusion, that means you have imperfect senses. Your senses are imperfect. Which means that you will make mistakes. And because no one likes to make mistakes, then we cheat to cover it up. So that is the defects of the conditioned soul. So basically, you cannot trust material knowledge. Just like I was listening yesterday to one lecture by Radhanath Swami, and he was saying, everyone must have faith. Faith is the nature of the soul. Everyone has faith. But where you will put your faith, that is the question. Will you put your faith in something material, or will you put your faith in something spiritual? Will you put your faith in Krishna? And if you look at bhakti, bhakti is nothing but an increasement of faith. As your faith increases, right, your bhakti increases. The more faith you have in Krishna, the more devotion you have to Krishna. And when you have perfect faith in Krishna, unflinching faith in Krishna, unflinching trust in something sublime, which is Krishna, then that is full faith, that is love for Krishna. If you don't have faith in Krishna, then you cannot let go of the material world. Just like sometimes I imagine surrendering to Krishna is like standing with your back towards a cliff and holding on to, say, a tree. Right? So just imagine right now, like, your back is against a cliff, right? You could fall over a cliff, and you're holding on by the tree, and Krishna says, let go, I will catch you. How much faith do you have to have, right, to let go? That's what it's like surrendering to Krishna, right? We're holding on to this material world. But when you actually let go, right, and you know that Krishna will catch you, Krishna will catch you. But you have to have that faith, which means bhakti is nothing but a development of faith. The more faith you have, then the greater your bhakti is, the greater your devotion is. And pure devotional service means you have full faith in Krishna. You have complete or pure faith in Krishna, nothing else. You have faith in nothing else but Krishna. That is pure devotional service. So, we need to develop that kind of faith in Krishna. instead of having faith in the material world. Now, you must have faith in something. The materialists, they have faith in material things, right? We have faith in spiritual, in Vaishnava literature. We have faith in Srimad Bhagavatam. Difficult for the non-devotees to have faith in the Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam will test your faith. Specifically, it is said by the Acharyas, which canto will be the test of your faith? Which one? Fifth canto. Actually, all of them are. The first verse is a test of your faith. But the fifth canto is like a stumbling block for those who are still materially inclined, who are looking at spiritual life with material faculty. You can't look at spiritual life with material faculty. It doesn't work. Try to work it out with material faculty. Fifth canto will describe things which are beyond imagination. You cannot perceive them with material senses. So therefore, everyone will become doubtful. And this will be a test of faith. Is this actually true? Do I accept this? Based on the authority of Bhagavatam? Or do I reject it? Do I have some little voice in the back of my head which constantly says, this isn't really true? This is the test, like that. Just like it's described in the Bhagavatam, this universe is half full with water. And lying on that water is a huge Narayana personality, a huge Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. And from his navel is coming a lotus stem, which goes to the top of the universe. And the Milky Way, when you look at nighttime, you see the stars, when you see the Milky Way is that lotus stem, the 14 planetary systems. And Earth is in the center, and at the top there is a lotus flower, and that is Brahma Loka, where Brahmaji resides with perfected souls. What do you think of that? What do you think of it? It's a test of faith. No one can prove it. No one can, you can't see it with this, with these senses. It doesn't matter which telescope you use. You cannot see it. You'll never see it. But does it exist or not? Hands up if you think it exists. Unflinching trust in something sublime. This is the test. This is the test. Unflinching trust in something sublime. Prabhupada quotes this verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Shraddha shabde vishwasan. How does it go? Shraddha shabde vishwasa kahi sudridra nishchaya. This is what faith means. Unflinching trust, which is something beyond our perception. How do you know it exists? How are we convinced that it exists? That bhakti is just based on simple faith. That's all bhakti is based upon. Simple faith. Bhagavatam says it, we believe it. But how do we know? Right? We know because we chant Hare Krishna. That's how we know. Right? Because what does the Shastra say? When you chant the Maha Mantra, you will get a higher taste. Param drishtva nivartate. Krishna says in the Gita. This is one of the principal themes of the Bhagavad Gita. This is one of the principal themes of spiritual life. In order to experience spiritual life, you have to get the param drishtva. You have to get something which is superior or something beyond our perception. Prabhupada says that you cannot experience spiritual life by licking the outside of the honey bottle. It doesn't work. It is useless. You can just lick the outside of the bottle, right? You know, make a test, make an experiment one time. Get a jar of honey and start licking the jar. Right? There's nothing there. No pleasure. If you want to experience spiritual life, you have to take what is inside. You have to take it directly. You cannot take it from an external point of view. You cannot approach Krishna from a material platform. Krishna must be experienced from the spiritual platform, from the platform of the soul. So when you have simple faith and you chant the Maha Mantra, the Shastra says you will experience bliss. That is the nature of experiencing the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. You will experience bliss. Just like when Ishwara Puri gave to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu the Maha Mantra. And he said, you chant this mantra. He said, you are a fool. Forget everything that you have learned. And you just chant this Maha Mantra. Right? And because Mahaprabhu had the perfect mood of being a perfect disciple of the Guru, simple faith, he took the Maha Mantra and he chanted it all night. And then he came back the next morning and his Guru said, so what is the effect? And Mahaprabhu said, what is this mantra you have given me? I've become mad. I cannot stop it. My tongue cannot stop chanting it. I'm intoxicated by this mantra. This is how we know that everything the Bhagavatam says exists. Because the Bhagavatam says that if you chant, this will be the effect. Right? The heart will soften. Tears will come to the eyes eventually. Right? It says in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, this is the effect of chanting. The heart melts and tears come from the eyes. Everything becomes soft by the chanting. That's the goal of the chanting. So this is how we know we're getting some effect, we're getting some feeling, we're getting some, we're perceiving something through the chanting. So then we know that everything the Bhagavatam says, it must be true. Because the Bhagavatam has told us, you chant, you'll get this effect. It happens, right? It is spiritual, it is sublime, it is something beyond our material perception. And now we know that everything the Bhagavatam says is true. This is the test. Just like when Mahaprabhu was living in Jagannath Puri, there was one boy called Gopal. And Mahaprabhu was, one day he was going to do his ablutions, going to the lavatory. So Mahaprabhu was going, and while he was going, he was holding his tongue. And Gopal said, Mahaprabhu, why are you holding your tongue? And he said that, because I can't stop chanting this mantra. I can't stop this chanting. My tongue will not stop this chanting. Will not stop chanting Hare Krishna. Therefore, I don't want to chant Hare Krishna when I'm in the latrine. When I'm in the toilet, I don't want to stop. I don't want to chant because this is impure place. And then Gopal was just a little boy, and he said to Mahaprabhu, he said, then what about at the time of death? He said, at the time of death, you lose control of your faculties. You will pass stool, you will pass urine involuntarily. You'll be contaminated at that time also. So does this mean we should not chant at the time of death? And Mahaprabhu said, you are my guru. And then from that time on, he became known as Gopal Guru Goswami, who was a very powerful acharya in our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. So this is how we know. So some people say that you cannot describe the absolute truth with material words. And that is true. With material words, you cannot. That's why it is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahma Pramad Vipralipsa Karana Patava. It says, if you have these four defects, then you cannot describe the absolute truth. But Asha Vigyavakye Nahi Dosha Esaba. Right? It means that the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, the words, the Vigyavakya, or the words of the great souls, nahi dosha, there are no faults. There are no defects in the words of the sages. There's no defects in the words of the Bhagavatam, in the words of the Bhagavad Gita. There are no defects. Nahi dosha means there's no defect. Because it is coming from a transcendental perspective. Just like if we go outside, is today cloudy or clear? It's clear. Okay, so we can't give the example like that. So I'll think of a different example. No, we'll use that example. So if you go out and it's cloudy, right, then your perspective is limited. Because we're below the clouds. So we have a limited perspective. How can you make comments? How can you say what is what? How can you say, oh, this is like that or that is like that? You don't know. Right? You're just this tiny little insect-like creature, right? Just like if you look in Western society in the last 100 years, who is said to be the most intelligent man? Who is the most intelligent? Last 100 years. Who would be voted? If you took a vote around the world, who would they vote was the most intelligent last 100 years? That's good. Sometimes I can't even work out why you say these things. Sometimes I know what you're going to say even before you say it. Sometimes we miss the point. So, if we took a vote worldwide, not just in one bedroom in Albert Park, right, if we took a worldwide vote, then who would be seen as being the most intelligent man?
Albert Einstein.
Albert Einstein, right? He's Einstein. He's the most intelligent person. He's considered the most intelligent in the last 100 years, right? So, Einstein said that I am just like a child playing on the beach, building sandcastles. I have no idea what is in the depths of the ocean. This is Einstein. Most intelligent man, right? But what was his intelligence? His intelligence was theistic, he had proper intelligence. This is proper intelligence. It doesn't mean that, oh, okay, I'm so intelligent now. Yeah, I know 3 shlokas from the Bhagavad Gita. I'm so intelligent. Right? And now I have so many opinions and so I know so much. No. The most intelligent people think they know nothing. That's intelligence, because you actually understand your position. This proves you are intelligent. Einstein didn't say, yes, I know everything. Like that. Einstein said, no, I'm just like a little boy playing with sandcastles. I have no idea what's in the depths of the ocean. We don't know. So from our limited perspective, what can we say? What can we say about creation? What can we say about how everything took place? What can we say? People come out with all their theories and so forth. Just like I was listening to the radio one day, maybe a long time ago, 10 years ago, something, I was into the radio. And one scientist said, we now have conclusive proof of the possibility of strands of energy which are running through the universe from one side to the other. Right? I now have conclusive proof of the possibility. I mean, what are you saying? Who cares about your opinion? Right, you're just this little. We're just these little tiny creatures, and we have no perception. We don't even know. Like I said, if it's a cloudy day, you have no idea what's on the other side. Right, it's only now because we have internet and we have aeroplanes that we can fly around and satellites. We can get some idea of what's going on, like that. But 100 years ago, people had no idea what was going on. People didn't even know there was another culture, another country. Just like 2,500 years ago, you had Alexander the Great. Right, who conquered all the way from Macedonia, all the way from Greece to India. Simultaneously, while he was there, in China, right, you had Genghis Khan, right, who had another huge empire, and they didn't even know each other existed back then. Right, one had virtually had control of half the earth, and the other had control of the other half. They didn't even know the other existed. Right, we don't know anything. What is our perception? But people think, yes, my opinion is so important. I now have conclusive proof of the possibility. Now, you can have conclusive proof about the possibility of anything if you like. But it doesn't mean anything's true. So therefore, the Vaishnavas, we put our faith in the words of the Bhagavatam, in the words of the Bhagavad Gita. Because there is no fault there, because it is coming from a transcendental perspective. Because from Krishna's perspective, he can see the whole thing. Right, just like where does Krishna stand in terms of creation? Right, Krishna creates through his expansion, Mahavishnu. Now, if you look at Mahavishnu's perspective right now, if you were sitting on the shoulder of Mahavishnu right now and you could see what he could see, right, what would be your perspective? It'd be much different to what this is. Right, we're just thinking, is it going to be avocados for breakfast? Yeah, that's about as far as our perception goes. We just have this tiny little part of creation. But from Mahavishnu's perspective, he can see the entire creation. That's what the Bhagavatam teaches, the perspective from the situation from God's perspective. What God can see, what Krishna can see. Therefore, we have our faith in these words. This is the difference. Now, it is said that... in the first paragraph of the purport, that Krishna, when he creates this material world, he also gives facility for the different living entities to enjoy their different or fulfill their different desires. So basically the Vedas have three areas of knowledge. What are the three areas of knowledge in the Vedas? Yeah, but there's a different three also. That's true. That's true. Sambandha, Abhideya, and Praja. But there's a different three also. What are the Vedas divided in? Three areas of knowledge. Karma, Jnana, and Bhakti. Like that. So, basically everyone in the material world has desires to be fulfilled in those three areas. Either you have desires of karma, which means desires for sense gratification. You have desires for Jnana. Jnana means desires to cultivate knowledge or to understand something, an impersonal perception of God. And then, finally, there is bhakti. Bhakti means to re-establish your lost relationship with the Supreme, with Krishna, your constitutional position. Now, as it says here in the purport, for the devotees, he provides the understanding that leads them to pure devotional service. The Bhagavatam is considered exceptional amongst all scriptures because it emphasizes pure devotional service. Just like at the moment in the Bhaktivaibhava class, then we're studying the third canto of the Bhagavatam. Now, the second half of the third canto of the Bhagavatam, what is discussed?
Sankhya
Yoga. Yeah, Sankhya Yoga. Who teaches Sankhya Yoga? Lord Kapila. So the second part of the third canto is pretty much the teachings of Kapila Dev to Devahuti, Sankhya Yoga. Now, Sankhya Yoga is teaching nothing but pure devotional service. And in chapter 29, which we just finished, then Kapila Dev describes, because in the beginning of chapter 29, Devahuti asks Kapila Dev, please describe to me devotional service. Tell me, what is devotional service? So then he begins to describe it. What is actually pure devotional service? So to understand what something is, first you have to understand what something is not. Right? You can't understand what is something until you understand. And you see, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does this every chapter. Right? He says, here is one thing, here is the opposite. He says, here is material consciousness, and then a few verses later, this is spiritual consciousness. Right? This is, as Burujan Prabhu points out, this is good teaching. When you're teaching or you're giving class, then you give examples. Right? You say, okay, this is what we're aiming for, but this is what it is not. Then it becomes more clear. Just like when a diamond is on a black background, it becomes very prominent. So to explain something, you have to explain what is the black, right? And then someone says, okay, that's what it isn't. And then the prominent things becomes there. So first, Kapila Dev, when he explains devotional service to Devahuti, he describes devotional service under the influence of the three modes of material nature. Devotional service in the mode of goodness, in the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. So, now, does anyone remember what are some of the symptoms of devotional service in the mode of ignorance?
Anger.
What's that?
Anger.
Anger, yep. Violence, yep. Pride. Yep. Separatism, yep. That's good. Yeah, that's part of separatism and like this.
Places.
Yeah, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that's the symptom of the mode of ignorance. So, Kapila Dev says, devotional service in the mode of ignorance means the devotee is often angry. And this anger means that he will commit offences to other devotees. If you want to hold up your spiritual life, the best way to do it is to offend devotees. If you commit offences to devotees, guaranteed, it's like rowing a boat with the anchor out. Just like there's that Bengali pastime where the wedding party got in the boat and they rowed all night to go down the Ganga to the place where they would have the wedding the next day, but someone forgot to take the anchor out. So everyone rowed all night and the sun came up and they were still in the same place. And this is like performing devotional service in the mode of ignorance, meaning that you're performing devotional service, but because you're angry and because you offend other devotees, right, then you're simply impeding your progress in devotional service. Radhanath Swami gave one class and he said that When you offend a Vaishnava, because the Vaishnavas are particles of dust at the lotus feet of Krishna. So when you offend a Vaishnava, he said it is like taking a pin and sticking it into the deity's lotus feet. Sticking it into the foot of Krishna. Would you ever go onto the altar as a pujari? Hands up if you would ever go onto the altar and stick a pin into the deity. Right? But when you offended, you wouldn't do that, but when you offend a devotee, it's the same thing. Right? That's how it feels from Krishna's perspective. If you're offending one of his devotees, it is like pricking him in the foot. So therefore, devotional service, as Kapila Dev teaches in the mode of ignorance, means that we are... devotional service in the mode of ignorance means that often we are angry. And this anger results in we offend the devotees. And when we offend the devotees, then we completely disrupt our progress in devotional service. Now, what are some of the symptoms of devotional service in the mode of passion? Anyone remember? Separatism? Yep, once again. Yeah, everyone has motivations there, like that. In devotional service in the mode of passion, then we have a desire for prominence, right? Or to be famous, to be recognized among the devotees. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the most difficult anatta to pull out of the heart is the anatta of pratishtha, which we have said many times before. It is the desire to be prominent as a devotee. Right? This means that we are affected by the mode of passion in our devotional service. Right? If there's some desire to be a prominent personality, even amongst the Vaishnava circle, even amongst the society of devotees, if we want to be a prominent devotee, then we are affected by the mode of passion in our devotional service. So once again, this is one is making advancement, but still his advancement is greatly impeded because it does not give Krishna the same satisfaction. You're offering him devotional service, you're giving Krishna the offering, but what is the mentality while you're doing the offering? You're still very much egocentric or very much considering yourself within the activity. Right, you're supposed to be doing the service for Krishna. Your consciousness is supposed to be concentrating upon Krishna. You're meant to be focusing on Krishna and doing it for his pleasure. But because you're affected by the mode of passion, and because the desire to be famous is so prominent within your consciousness, you're very much thinking about yourself. Is everyone looking at me? Is everyone noticing me? Is everyone seeing that I am doing the devotional service? The service is being done, but does everyone recognize I did it? And not only I did it, but how well I did it. Right? And not only how well I did it, but did they everyone tell me how well I did it? That's devotional service in the mode of passion. Become very egocentric. So once again, because devotional service is supremely pure, then we make advancement, but we are not as pleasing to Krishna. It doesn't give Krishna great... Krishna does not relish that kind of service. It's just like when someone's doing something for you, but if they're very distracted, right, if they're thinking of something else or looking at something else while they're doing it, then it's not so satisfying for you. Someone's serving you prasadam, but they're having a conversation over there and, you know, prasadam is not being served, not with proper attention. It's not so satisfying. So similarly, this is what it's like when we're in the mode of passion, mode of ignorance, right? We're doing our service, but we're very preoccupied with other things. So therefore it doesn't really give Krishna great pleasure. Krishna accepts the service, no doubt, but it doesn't give him great satisfaction. And then, in the mode of goodness, what are some of the symptoms of devotional service in the mode of goodness? That's right. See you in Vrindavan.
Free from material desires.
Free from material desires, yeah. What else? What is devotional service in the mode of?
Attachment.
Detachment and what?
Detachment, honesty.
Honesty, yeah. Yeah, has these good qualities. Devotional service in the mode of goodness is recommended. Because when you do devotional service in the platform, the mode of goodness, it becomes more balanced and more selfless. And then you can progress towards pure goodness. However, Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, the danger is that you have to be conscious of a sense of complacency, of happiness, and that comes from happiness and knowledge. Because the symptom of one who's in the mode of goodness is he becomes happy. You become materially satisfied. And you develop knowledge. So when you develop knowledge, you develop a sense of satisfaction and so forth. But then you may want to become complacent and stay on that platform. In other words, you want to stay in the material world. You don't want to transcend the material world. Just like we were reading last night in the Bhagavatam, that Srila Prabhupada was saying that even when Krishna may come to you and say, come back to the spiritual world, Prabhupada describes the nature of Maya is so covering that we may say to Krishna, no, Krishna, I'm satisfied. I'm actually happy here. I'll keep serving you, but I'm actually happy. This is not pure devotional service. This can be in the mode of goodness. So this is you should perform devotional service from the mode of goodness, but the danger is you may become complacent. You may think, oh, it's nice, I have a nice wife, and I have nice chapatis, and I have nice, you know, I have a Subaru now, and, you know, everything is good. Like that. So you may get into a complacent situation. Right? You're doing devotional service, you're making progress, but still you're attached to the material world. So the Bhagavatam teaches us is that we must perform pure devotional service. And what does pure devotional service mean? It means you have to give up all material attachments. That is pure devotional service. It's not pure until you release your attachments in this world. This is how it all becomes pure. So therefore we gave the example in the beginning, it takes a great deal of faith. It means that you have to, you know, put your back towards the cliff. Right? One day you have to let go and just drop, right? And trust that Krishna will catch you. And Krishna will catch you, right? Because he is always desiring to reciprocate with his devotees. That is his desire. He wants to have pure loving exchanges with his devotees. And he relishes that and it conquers him. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says the nature of pure bhakti is Sri Krishna Kashani. What does that mean? Yeah, it attracts Krishna. It controls Krishna. Pure devotional service attracts Krishna. It actually conquers Krishna. Krishna is known as Ajita, which means he cannot be conquered. But if one is a pure devotee, Krishna is easily conquered. That is the nature of pure devotional service. So therefore, the Bhagavatam is recommending that we perform pure devotional service. This will give satisfaction to Krishna, and it conquers Krishna, controls him. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
As you explained, we started with the lecture about faith in Krishna, increasing the faith in Krishna. How do you gradually develop our faith in Krishna in our spiritual life? And other question is, when we offense against any Vaishnavas, how do we, if you want to tell a devotee that you're doing this wrong, you shouldn't have done this, so it gives a sense that haven't I offended that Vaishnava in that case? So what is the proper way to approach any Vaishnava? We know that this is an offense we have done to devotees. So how do we know that it's an offense like that?
How do we rectify the offense?
No, how do we know that it's an offense? Because it's a bit confusing. Like even though we are trying to correct the devotee in case if he's he is doing devotional service and he did it in a wrong way, we want to explain him doing it the correct way, but he might feel offended that, okay, I'm doing it from such a long time, why do you need to explain it to me?
So then you can't correct someone unless they accept you as an authority. That's called Vaishnava etiquette. So if someone's, if you're not an authority, then you cannot correct. If you're an authority, then you can correct. If the devotee accepts your authority, then you can say something. But if you don't have that, if you're not accepted as an authority, then the devotee may not listen to you. Like that. So you have to be careful as a devotee not to correct people if you're not in a position of authority. Position of authority doesn't mean that you're just like you have a formal position within the temple structure. But position of authority means that devotees respect you and they respect your authority. So if they respect you as an authority, either as a in terms of position or in terms of spiritual authority, if they respect you and they listen to you, then you can instruct. But if you're not being, if you don't have that position, then it's very, you have to be very careful. Even you have to be careful if you have that position, how you tell devotees and the way you treat devotees and the way you speak. Like that. First you have to cultivate relationships with people. If you don't have relationship, then it's very difficult to correct anyone. Just like sometimes some devotee may come to you, but the only time the devotee ever speaks to you is when they tell you you're doing something wrong. So how does that make you feel? Right? You feel like they never speak to me unless I'm doing something wrong. All they ever come and tell me, you're doing this wrong. You're doing that wrong. That's not good. So there's no relationship. They're not satisfying. But if someone has a relationship with you, but then sometimes they have to say, Prabhu, this is wrong, what you're doing, then you accept it. You say, okay, no problem. I understand. Because the relationship is developed. Right? So if you want to instruct, you have to develop relationships with the devotees. Then they will accept your authority. Spiritual life is based upon affection. There must be affection. And especially between the junior devotees and the senior devotees, there must be affection. In other words, if the junior devotees have affection towards the senior devotees, then if the senior devotee gives instruction, it's easy for them to accept. But if there's no affection, because spiritual life is based on these affectionate dealings. It's not formal. Spiritual life is not based on formality. This person is senior, then I offer. No, it's because you have affection. Naturally you offer the respect. And then naturally that person will give you instruction. Now, if you are sincere in spiritual life, then you will take the bitter medicine and the sweet medicine. Sometimes the senior devotee, he will give you the sweet medicine, but sometimes he'll give you the bitter medicine. He points out your faults. Now, if you're sincere, you will take both, because you understand this is good for me. Right? But sometimes, devotees, they only want to hear the good things. But as soon as someone begins to point out some faults, then, why are you saying this to me? Like that. The whole basis of spiritual life is humility. So if you're not willing to listen and you're not willing to get instruction, you cannot advance. If you're not willing to hear the bitter things also, you can't advance in spiritual life. Like that. Does that answer something?
And the first question was faith developing more faith in Krishna.
How do we develop more faith in Krishna? Faith is developed by experience. Just like after class, what will everyone do? Go and take prasadam. Why do they go and have prasadam?
Satisfying,
yeah. Why do we go and have prasadam? Because yesterday we had a positive experience, right? We had prasadam, right? It was nice. It was satisfying. It was relishable. It was nectar, amrita, right? So that's why we go back. So that is how we develop our faith, right? The more experience we get, I chanted my rounds. It was blissful. Let me do it tomorrow also. I worship the guru. I worship Tulsi. I serve the Vaishnavas. Right, I came to the kirtan, I came to the class, I worshipped the deity. Right, we did all these different seva, and we get reciprocation from Krishna. That higher taste, the parandrishtva, So the more you get that, then the more faith you get. Let me do it again, let me do it again, let me do it again. Let me do it better. Let me improve myself. It's hard to be a devotee for a long time. It's easy to be a devotee for a little time. Easy. You know, you can say devotee for 6 months, that's no problem. But to be a devotee for a long time, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, that takes effort. So if you want to be a devotee for a long time, you constantly have to be looking how to improve yourself. Right? And when devotees stop doing that, when they stop thinking, how do I improve myself, how to make my service better for Krishna? Right? When you stop doing that, then maybe you'll leave. Maybe you'll stop serving Krishna. Because you're thinking, what else is there now? I've done everything now. What else do I do? No, but when a devotee, how do you remain enthusiastic? Because you have to constantly look at yourself. Can I do this better? Right? Never think that you have reached the goal. You never think that, oh, my service is so good. Right? A devotee always thinks, my service is not good enough. I can always do better for Krishna. So we have to have this kind of constant self-appraisal and self-improvement. And then you'll stay motivated to keep going as a devotee. Is that okay? Any other?
Yeah, like the Prabhu asked the question. It's like staying in a devotee's community, you know, you come through many devotees. And then it also depends upon the age. Like there are many devotees, you know, elder to me. And we both came at the same time, and it happens that they instruct me, you know, Prabhu should do this, do that. And I often see that they themselves are not able to follow. And then at the second point, they say, oh, you should do that. And I really get pissed off. I said, what is this?
You can't say that in the temple.
Yeah, so I really get angry, but I can't say to him. I think that, you know, but it really agitates my mind, and I can't see him on the face, but in my mind I would think, oh, this is very bad, this is very bad. So and that time, how to be tolerant, you know, because they understand by the action that, you know, I'm not reciprocating to him. And so yeah, that is a thing which...
Yeah, so the main thing in spiritual, or one of the main things, is that you can't give instruction unless you follow yourself. Prabhupada gave that example of Gandhi. That one woman, she said to Gandhi, please tell my son he's eating too many sweets. And Gandhi said, come back next week. So they came back next week. She brought her son back. And then Gandhi said, stop eating sweets. And the boy said, okay. He listened to Gandhi because Gandhi is speaking. And then the boy left, and then the mother said, then why didn't you tell him that last week? And Gandhi said, because last week I was eating sweets. I said, how can I tell him? Like that. So if you're not practicing, then why? How can you tell someone else? You know, sometimes devotees, you know, we get on this pure devotional platform, we go around and start telling everyone everything, right? But then you're not doing it yourself. So where's your potency? There's no potency. And no one's going to listen to someone who doesn't do it themselves. So therefore, the point is that if you instruct, if you give instruction, first you must follow. If you are following, then you can give instruction. If you're not following, then do not instruct. What is your position? You have no qualification, so do not instruct. If you're following, then you can speak. And if someone is speaking to you, then just be humble. My spiritual master told me one day, he said that, I said that, you know, there's one senior devotee, and we were having some difference, like that, but he was senior to me. But then my spiritual master said, but you can be humble. You know, because if you're humble, then that solves all problems. Therefore, Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Trinadapi Sunichena Turodapi Sahishnuna Amane Na Manadena Kirtaniyaha Sadahari. He says that the Vaishnavas, they wear that verse around their neck like a Kanti Mala, always with them, always humble. So when you're humble, everything becomes salt, more tolerant than a tree. Right? Someone is annoying you or saying things to you which you don't like, but if you're humble, if you're tolerant, really humble, really tolerant, what's the problem? Material world is like that. No big deal. You have to learn to be like that. But you yourself, you do not instruct unless you're following. If someone instructs you, what to do? Be tolerant, be humble. It's okay. Any other point?
Yeah, after a while, and they settle down into devotional service and not take all the opportunities that become available to them.
You have to constantly hear like that when you come into class regularly. See, what happens, devotees stop coming to class. You know, when you stop coming to class, you stop hearing. And when you stop hearing, then you forget. So you have to constantly be reminded. So if you follow strict sadhana, then you'll become inspired. I want to serve the devotees. Otherwise, you get caught up in materialistic activities and become sidetracked, and then your consciousness is not focused on serving devotees like that. Sometimes we feel ourselves slipping, so we have to analyze, why am I slipping? What is my problem? And then we have to pick ourselves up and then reapply ourselves again, like strictly like that. So in devotional service, you have to constantly reevaluate yourself. You know, am I slipping or am I going forward? Like that. And if you see you're slipping, then do something about it. Do not procrastinate. Like that, so. Is it okay?
How to assess your advancement in Krishna consciousness?
How to assist? Take lots of prasadam. Just do sadhana bhakti. Do devotional service. So many things we can do. Chant the holy, be humble, chant the holy name.
But how to assess what level you reached?
How to assess?
Yes.
What level? Then you have to read the scripture. Because in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes, in the Shastra, it describes what is Kanishta Adhikari, what is Majjhima Adhikari, what is Uttama Adhikari. So you have to study, and then you have to assess, where do I fit in? Just like when you study Swadhyaya. Swadhyaya means self-study. Right? So Swadhyaya means that when you read Prabhupada's books, you're studying yourself. Because you're seeing, what is my standard? Just like we read a few weeks ago, what is devotional service, mode of ignorance, mode of passion, mode of goodness. So I saw myself, I studied, where am I? What problems do I have? How am I affected by the lower modes in my devotional service, right? So in this way, by that self-study, then you understand, you can assess where you're at. Are you Majjhimadhikari? Are you Kanishta? Do I have these problems? Do I have these anattas? What am I trying to overcome? Like that. So you have to study, because by studying the Shastra, then you assess what is your position. Like that. That's it.
Why Vedic culture is so much pleasing to Krishna?
Vedic culture?
Yes.
Because it's a reflection of the culture in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, there's a culture. Right? In the spiritual world, they have a culture. They do things in a particular way. They dress in a particular way. They have a particular type of music. They have a particular type of artwork. Right? Now, when it comes into this material world, Vedic culture is a reflection of that culture in the spiritual world. So therefore, Vedic culture is doing things to Krishna. When you dress Krishna, you have to dress Krishna like this, nicely. Why do we dress Krishna like this? Because this is how Krishna wants to be dressed. Because this is how Krishna is dressed in the spiritual world. Right? If you do not dress Krishna appropriately, then it doesn't please Krishna. Right? And so in other words, you have to follow the Vedic system or the rules and regulations which are described in the Shastra, because that is how Krishna wants to be served according to what happens in the spiritual world. So you have to learn to serve Krishna according to how he wants to be served. Just like in India recently in Vrindavan, there's one very famous deity, Banki Bihari. And the pujaris, they committed a great offence to the deity, because they dressed the deity up in blue jeans, and I think he had like a black jacket, and instead of holding a flute, he was holding a mobile phone. Right? This is Maha Aparad. Right? How dare you touch Krishna like that? Never before it happened in Kali Yuga. Never before it's happened 5,000 years, and then some, you know, imbecile, you know, dresses Krishna like, according to, you know, this is not standard. This gives no pleasure to Krishna. Right? It's purely for sense gratification. It's completely affected by the modes of material nature. It's a great offense to Krishna. It's a great offense to Krishna. Like that. So everyone in Vrindavan was very offended. Very offended.
Krishna himself also follows this culture.
What's that?
Krishna himself also follows this culture.
Krishna invented the culture. He doesn't follow it, he invented it. He invented it and he follows it. You read in the Shastra that when he finishes prasadam, what does he do?
Washes his hands and mouth.
Washes his hands and mouth. Right? That's what they do in the spiritual world. And when Krishna finishes prasad, he washes his hands and mouth. In the spiritual world. Right? Because that is culture. If you don't wash your hands and mouth after you eat, then that's uncultured. Right? It's tamasic. It will bring you into the mode of ignorance. Right? Just like in English we have this saying, cleanliness is next to godliness. Prabhupada said, no, cleanliness is godliness. God is clean. Right? You ever see Krishna not... Have a look at the altar. The altar is the cleanest place in the whole temple. You know, Krishna demands cleanliness. Why? Because in the spiritual world everything is clean. No mess, no dust, nothing. Everything is clean. So this must be the mood. We must follow the culture. Vedic culture means the culture of the spiritual world. Like that. Is that okay?
Krishna, during Arjuna, when you went to battlefield, Krishna was with Arjuna. And he was telling Arjuna to fight in the battlefield. And he was fighting materially and spiritually. But in Kali Yuga, to fight materially means if you have injustice, so we should uplift spiritually, or we should fight both together. You know, injustice. Yeah. Suppose if you are loyal to anybody in materially ways, like your devotee, then when you grow old, then you are just as a old dog or something else, and that time they don't realize the value in materially. This is useless. So we should. There's one way I know that spiritually we fight, like ignoring, or materially in other aspect we should go ahead. But what is the solution for that?
Yeah, it means that, in basically a devotee, we're trying to establish Sanatana Dharma in this world. We're trying to establish spiritual culture in this world. That is our fight. But then, if we see morality also being broken, we see people are doing improper things, then we will speak out, because devotees are naturally moral. Devotees naturally follow morality, and they naturally follow the laws and the mode of goodness, the laws of Shastra. They do not steal, they do not lie, they do not perform improper activities. So a devotee will speak out against those things as much as possible, like that. But our ultimate goal is to become Krishna conscious. That's the main thing which we're trying to teach people. And these sub-religious principles, then devotees, we naturally follow those things. So then we have to try to establish those things in the world also. That's natural. Just like truthfulness, there's no truthfulness anymore. Politicians say things, you know, as soon as they speak it's a lie. So then what's the point? What's the point? Then why speak? If you're lying, why speak? And now it's accepted as a standard. That's how Kali Yuga has become, like that. So devotees, then we are trying to establish truthfulness, cleanliness, right, honesty, all these things, like that.
No, that we have actually during spiritual life we have those things. But in materially, how Arjuna was fighting all those things in a legal battle with Krishna, with the help of Krishna. So we should go ahead things like on those. If you have injustice on those cases, we should do also like that, or we should sideline, we should ignore, or just do spiritual.
It probably comes down to case by case circumstance. Yes. Yeah, you have to give the actual circumstance. You go to a senior devotee and you say, this is the circumstance, what should I do? And then he will give you guidance, generally. Any other question, comment?
Probably we see day by day people are actually running after material things more and more, more and more. And less and less people are actually becoming interested in this education. So now, like, what should we do here in this situation so that more people come here in this moment? Because day by day, things are getting worse and worse.
We should preach. The Kali Yuga is only going to get worse from now on. It's not going to get better. Now, don't expect any good things are happening from now on. We're at a point in history now where you're going to see bad things are going to happen from now on. There's going to be more and more tension internationally from now on. Economics is becoming, just like in Egypt, they haven't got enough bread, enough wheat. People have to line up at the moment just to get bread. Right? Already this is happening. In America, they're already beginning to ration rice. Right? Certain, you can only buy a certain amount of rice. It's already happening. It's only going to get worse. All these problems are only going to happen. That's why we've moved to the farm. Right? Because we're going to start growing food like that. Because Prabhupada said, what are the things that you need in this world? He said, you need food and you need shelter. If you've got those two things, everything's okay. If you haven't got those things, you know, Prabhupada said you can't eat nuts and bolts. So the world is going to become more and more problematic like that. So what do? We preach. We try to bring people to Krishna consciousness, try to bring them to sanity like that. Preach and preach and preach and preach as much as you can. Is it okay? Okay. Any other question, comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.